Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're really digging into individual retirement arrangements, you know, IRAs.
Yeah, those personal savings plans that give you some nice tax advantages for retirement.
Exactly. We sorted through a bunch of material, mostly from the IRS, the publication IRAs, retirement plans, and ethics, to pull out the key things you need to know about getting them started and, well, managing them.
Mm-hmm. The idea is to give you the essentials without you having to read every single line of the regulations.
Right. Get you up to speed quickly.
And we'll be looking mainly at the big ones. Traditional IRAs, Roth IRAs, plus those employer ones, SEP IRAs.
Which can be Roth SEP now, apparently.
That's right, a newer option. And also simple IRAs, which also have a Roth flavor now, too.
Okay. So lots of options, but the rules and the tax side of things are different for each. Understanding that's pretty crucial.
Definitely.
So let's jump into maybe the first big decision for a lot of people, traditional versus Roth. What's the fundamental difference there?
Okay, so the main thing, really, is when you get the tax benefit. With a traditional IRA, your contributions might be tax deductible now in the year you make them.
Okay, lowering your current tax bill.
Potentially, yeah. But the catch is, when you take qualified distributions later in retirement, that money is generally taxed. Ordinary income.
Gotcha. And Roth.
Roth flips it. You usually don't get a deduction for your contributions up front, so no immediate tax break. But, and this is the big appeal for many, your qualified distributions in retirement that includes all the earnings, too, are completely tax-free.
Wow. Okay. Tax-free growth and withdrawals. That sounds pretty good.
It can be, yeah. The IRS has tables, like in Pub 590A, that lay this out clearly.
So a choice. Tax break now or tax-free income later. Who can actually open and put money into these?
Well, generally speaking, if you have taxable compensation, basically, money you earn from working, you can contribute to a traditional IRA.
And they got rid of that age limit, right?
They did. That's a good point. After 2019, the old 70.5 age limit for contributing to a traditional IRA is gone. So you can keep contributing as long as you're earning.
Okay. What about Roth eligibility? Same deal.
You still need taxable compensation. But for Roth, there are also income limits. If your income is too high, you might not be able to contribute directly to a Roth IRA. We can circle back to those specific limits.
Yeah, let's park that for a moment, because here's something common. Lots of people have a 401k or something similar at work already. How does that impact putting money into a traditional IRA, specifically the deduction part? It gets a bit messy here, doesn't it?
It can, yeah. If you are covered by a retirement plan at work, or your spouse is, if you file jointly, then your ability to deduct your traditional IRA contributions might be phased out or even eliminated completely. Depends on your income.
And not just any income figure, right? It's that modified adjusted gross income, or MGI.
Exactly. MAGI. It's your AGI with a few specific things added back. The IRS uses it for a lot of these phase-outs. Mm-hmm. Pub 590A has worksheets, worksheet 2 specifically for 2024, that show the income ranges based on your filing status.
So, like, if you make too much and have a work plan, you might not get the deduction.
Correct. For example, if you're single, covered by a work plan, mm-hmm. and your MAGI for 2024 is, say, between $77,000 and $87,000, your deduction gets reduced over $87,000. Probably no deduction at all.
Okay. So the deduction shrinks and then disappears as your income goes up if you have that workplace plan.
Precisely. There's an example in the IRS publication that shows a couple who both maxed out contributions but got a reduced deduction because their combined MAGI was in that phase-out zone.
But even if you can't deduct it, can you still make the contribution to a traditional IRA?
Yes. Absolutely. You can still contribute. It just becomes a non-deductible contribution.
Oh, okay. And if you do that?
Super important. You need to keep track of those non-deductible amounts. You do that by filing Form 8606 with your tax return.
Why is that so important?
Because that tells the IRS, hey, I already paid taxes on this money going in.
Right.
So when you eventually take distributions, that portion comes out tax-free. You don't want to pay taxes on it twice.
Makes sense. Keep good records. Okay, let's switch gears to those employer plans you mentioned earlier, SEP and simple IRAs. What's the story with those?
Okay, SEP IRA, that stands for Simplified Employee Pension. It's really popular with self-employed people and small business owners.
Right.
With a SEP, the employer, which might be you if you're self-employed, makes contributions to a traditional IRA set up for each eligible employee, including yourself.
And you mentioned the Roth SEP possibility now.
Yes, that's thanks to the Secure 2.0 Act. After 2022, employees can set up their SEP plans to allow employees to choose Roth treatment for those employer contributions. So the contribution goes into a Roth IRA instead of a traditional one.
Interesting flexibility. And the Simple IRA, how does that one work?
Simple IRA, that's savings incentive match plan for employees, also aimed at small employers, usually ones with 100 or fewer employees who earned at least $5,000 in the prior year.
Okay.
With the Simple, employees can choose to put it in their own money through salary reduction. And the employer has to contribute too. They either have to match employee contributions up to a certain percentage or make a flat contribution for everyone, even if the employee doesn't put anything in.
An employer match or a guaranteed contribution?
Exactly. And just like the SEP, Secure 2.0 also allows these contributions, both the employees and the employers, to be designated as Roth Simple IRA contributions starting after the end of 2022.
Got it. Now, when we talk about employees for these plans, does that just mean the regular 9-to-5ers?
Good question. Not always. The definition can be broader for retirement plan rules. It might include leased employees, for instance, unless their leasing firm has a solid retirement plan for them already.
Okay.
And you also have to consider rules around highly compensated employees, folks earning above a certain amount, like $155,000 in 2024, based on 2023 earnings and owners, people who own more than 5% of the business. Different rules can sometimes apply there.
Right. Makes sense. And for the self-employed folks using a SEP or maybe another plan, how do they figure out how much they can actually put in for themselves? Is it just a percentage of profit?
It's based on their net earnings from self-employment, which is basically your business profit after business expenses, and importantly, after deducting contributions for any regular employees you might have, and also after deducting one half of your self-employment taxes.
Okay, so it's calculated on the net amount.
Yes. And it's a bit of a circular calculation because the contribution itself is a deduction that affects the net earnings. The IRS provides specific rate tables and worksheets. Chapter 5 of Pub 590A is the place to look to help figure out the maximum deductible contribution.
Sounds like something you want to get right. What about the tax treatment when the money actually goes into these SEP or simple IRAs?
If you, as an employee, make elective deferrals to a traditional SEP or simple IRA, that money usually isn't counted in your taxable income for that year. It's pre-tax for income tax purposes.
But you still pay some taxes on it.
Yes, it is still subject to Social Security and Medicare taxes and FUTA, the unemployment tax.
Okay. And if it's designated as Roth?
Then it's the opposite for income tax. The contribution is included in your taxable income for the year, so you pay income tax on it up front, along with the Social Security, Medicare, and FUTA taxes.
Got it. Pre-tax for traditional, after-tax for Roth, generally speaking. Are there limits on how much can go into these plans? And what if you, like, accidentally put in too much?
Oh, yeah, definitely limits. For the regular traditional and Roth IRAs, the limit for 2024 is $7,000. Or, if you're age 50 or older, it's $8,000 because you get that extra $1,000 catch-up contribution.
And those are the same limits for 2025, too.
Looks like it. Based on current info, yes, $7,000, $8,000 with the catch-up.
Okay, what about simple limits?
For simple IRAs, the employee salary reduction limit is higher. It's $16,000 for 2024, and it's set to be $16,500 for 2025.
And then catch-up.
The catch-up for simples, if you're 50 or older, is $3,500 for both 2024 and 2025. Though, Secure 2.0 actually introduced rules that could allow for even higher catch-up amounts in simples for certain employers starting in 2024, but the details might depend on the employer size.
More complexity. So what happens if you contribute too much to a regular IRA, say?
That's called an excess contribution. And you generally have to pay a penalty tax on that excess amount for every year it stays in the account, unless you fix it.
How do you fix it?
Well, you can usually withdraw the excess contribution plus any earnings on it before your tax filing deadline, including extensions. Or in some cases, you might be able to apply the excess to a future year's contribution limit. But you definitely want to address it to avoid penalties.
Okay, good to know. Let's talk about getting money out, distributions, and moving money around rollovers. How does the tax work when you take money from a traditional IRA?
Typically, distributions from a traditional IRA are taxed as ordinary income in the year you take them out. Unless you made those non-deductible contributions we talked about earlier. If you did, and you kept track with Form 8606, then a portion of each distribution is considered a tax-free return of that after-tax money. The rest is taxable.
Okay. And Roth distributions, you said those can be tax-free?
Yes. Qualified distributions from a Roth IRA are generally tax-free. That includes both your original contributions and all the investment earnings.
What makes a distribution qualified?
Two main conditions. First, you have to satisfy a 5-year waiting period. It starts on January 1st of the first year you ever made any contribution to any Roth IRA.
Okay, a five-year clock. What's the second condition?
The distribution must meet one of these criteria. Either you're age 59 and a half or older, or you've become disabled, or the distribution is made to your beneficiary after your death. If you meet the five-year rule in one of these conditions, the withdrawal is qualified and tax-free.
Got it. What about those required minimum distributions, RMDs? When do they kick in for traditional IRAs?
You generally have to start taking RMDs from your traditional IRA by April 1st of the year, after the year you turn age 73.
That age keeps changing, doesn't it?
It does. It was 70 and a half, then 72 for a bit. Now it's 73 for folks reaching that age now. The exact age depends on your birth year because of the recent law changes.
Okay, age 73 currently. And how much do you have to take out?
It's calculated each year based on your account balance at the end of the previous year, divided by a life expectancy factor from IRS tables.
And this applies to inherited IRAs, too.
Yes, but the rules for inherited IRAs are pretty complex and have also changed recently. There are new life expectancy tables, and for many beneficiaries who inherit from someone who passed away after 2019, there's often a 10-year rule requiring the entire account to be emptied within 10 years, though there are exceptions. RMDs don't apply to Roth IRAs during the original owner's lifetime, by the way.
Ah, that's a key difference. No RMDs for the original owner of a Roth. Okay, let's talk rollovers. Moving money between accounts. What are the basic rules?
Generally, you can move money from one traditional IRA to another traditional IRA. Or you can move money from an employer plan, like a 401k, into a traditional IRA. Or sometimes even directly into a Roth IRA.
And you can do this tax-free?
Usually, yes, if you do it right. The most common way is a direct rollover, where the money goes straight from one institution to the other. Or you can take the money out yourself, but you have only 60 days to redeposit it into another eligible retirement account to avoid taxes and potential penalties.
That 60-day deadline sounds strict.
It is. And there's another tricky rule. For IRA to IRA rollovers, not transfers between trustees, but where you take the money out yourself, you can generally only do one such rollover per 12-month period. Across all your IRAs.
Only one per year. Okay, good to know. What about rolling from a work plan like a 401k to an IRA?
That's very common. Your employer has to give you a notice called a Section 402F notice explaining your options and the tax consequences. You can usually roll pre-tax 401k money into a traditional IRA tax-free.
And into a Roth IRA.
You can roll it into a Roth IRA too, but if the money in the 401k was pre-tax, you'll have to pay income tax on the amount you roll over to the Roth in the year you do the rollover. It's basically a conversion.
Right. Converting pre-tax to Roth means paying the tax now. Can you roll money between Roth IRAs?
Yes. Rolling from one Roth IRA to another Roth IRA is generally tax-free.
Can you roll money out of a Roth IRA and into, say, a 401k?
No, that's not allowed. Money in Roth IRA generally can't be rolled over to an employer retirement plan.
Okay. What about that term recharacterization? What does that mean?
Recharacterization. It's basically like an undo button for your IRA contribution for a specific year. Let's say you contributed to a Roth IRA, but then later realized you weren't eligible due to income, or maybe a traditional IRA would have been better.
So you can switch it.
Yes, you can tell the IRA trustee to transfer that contribution, plus any earnings or losses, directly to the other type of IRA, like from Roth to traditional, or vice versa. This has to be a trustee-to-trustee transfer, and you need to do it by your tax filing deadline, including extensions for the year the contribution was originally made.
So, a way to fix a contribution mistake.
Exactly. But there's a huge e-caveat now. You cannot recharacterize a Roth conversion. If you converted money from a traditional IRA to a Roth IRA in 2018 or later, you can't undo that conversion. That change came from the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act.
Okay, so contribution fixes might be possible, but conversion fixes are generally out. Good distinction.
Yeah.
Now, what if you need the money early, before retirement age? We hear about penalties.
Right. If you take money out of your traditional IRA before you reach age 59 and a half, the amount you withdraw that's taxable income is generally hit with an additional 10% tax on top of the regular income tax.
Ouch. 10% extra? Are there ways around that? Exceptions?
Yes. Thankfully, there are quite a few exceptions to that 10% early withdrawal penalty.
Like what?
Well, common ones include withdrawals, if you become totally and permanently disabled, distributions made after your death to your beneficiary, withdrawals to pay for qualified higher education expenses.
College costs.
Right. Also, up to $10,000 total in your lifetime can be withdrawn penalty-free for a first-time home purchase.
$10 lifetime limit for a first home.
Correct. More recent exceptions include distributions if you're terminally ill, certain distributions for victims of domestic abuse. There's IRS, Notice 2024-55 on that, and qualified distributions related to the birth or adoption of a child.
That birth or adoption one is interesting.
Yeah, and you might even be able to repay those birth or adoption distributions later. Another way around the penalty is taking distributions as a series of substantially equal periodic payments, or SEPPs.
SEPPs, how does that work?
It involves taking payments based on your life expectancy over a number of years, but you have to be really careful. If you start SEPPs and then modify the payment schedule before you turn 59 and a half, or before 5 years have passed, whichever is later, the IRS can hit you with a recapture tax, basically making you pay all the penalties you avoided plus interest.
Yikes. So SEPPs need careful planning.
Very careful planning, yes.
We should also probably mention prohibited transactions. Sounds serious. What are those?
They are serious. A prohibited transaction is basically using your IRA improperly in ways the IRS forbids, like borrowing money from your IRA. You can't do that.
Okay, no borrowing. What else?
You can't use your IRA as collateral, like security for a personal loan. And you generally can't engage in buying or selling transactions between your IRA and yourself or your close family members or businesses you control. These are called disqualified persons.
And if you do one of these things,
the consequences are harsh. If you engage in a prohibited transaction with your traditional IRA, the entire account is treated as distributed to you on the first day of the year the transaction occurred.
The whole thing.
The whole thing loses its IRA status. You'd likely owe income tax on the entire balance, plus penalties, if you're under 59 and a half. It essentially blows up the IRA.
Wow. Definitely something to avoid. Are there any exceptions?
A few narrow ones, like receiving standard benefits as a participant is okay, and some minor incentives from a bank for opening or contributing to an IRA might be allowed if they're within very specific dollar limits set by the Department of Labor. But generally, you want to steer very clear of anything that looks like self-dealing.
Good advice. Let's circle back quickly to simple IRAs. Are there specific deadlines for an employer to set one up?
Yes. If an employer hasn't had a simple IRA before, they generally need to set it up effective between January 1st and October 1st of the year. If they start the business after October 1st, they can set it up as soon as possible. But if they've had one before, they can only make a new one effective on January 1st.
And they need paperwork, right?
Absolutely. They have to adopt a written plan document. Mm-hmm. The IRS provides model forms, like 5305SS or 5305SA, for traditional simples, which make it easier.
Okay. And remind us of the employer contribution options again.
The employer has two choices. Option one, match employee contributions dollar for dollar up to 3% of the employee's compensation. Mm-hmm. They can sometimes choose to match a lower percentage, but not less than 1%, and not for more than 2 years out of any 5-year period.
Okay, matching up to 3%.
Or option two, make a non-elective contribution of 2% of compensation for every eligible employee who earned at least $5,000 that year. This 2% goes in whether the employee contributes or not.
Match or give 2% to everyone eligible.
That's the basic choice. Though, as we mentioned, Secure 2.0 added possibilities for higher contributions for some employers who also allow higher employee contributions. Also, there's a cap on the amount of compensation used to figure these contributions. For 2024, it's $345,000, going up to $350,000 in 2025.
Right. We've mentioned the Secure 2.0 Act quite a bit. Can you just summarize the biggest impacts it had on these IRA rules we've been discussing?
Sure. I think the key takeaways from Secure 2.0 related to IRAs are, first, allowing Roth treatment for employer contributions in SEP and simple plans. That's a big shift towards more Roth options.
Or flexibility.
Definitely. Second, the potential for higher catch-up contributions in simple plans for some employers. Third, the related potential for higher employer non-elective contributions in those simples if they allow the higher salary deferrals.
Okay.
And fourth, it codified rules around qualified disaster recovery distributions, allowing penalty-free access to funds and repayment options in certain federally declared disaster situations. Those get reported on Form 8915-F. It also raised the RMD age, as we discussed.
Lots of changes in that act. Finally, let's loop back one more time to self-employed individuals. How do they handle deducting their contributions on their tax returns?
Okay, so if you're self-employed, you generally deduct your contributions to plans like SEPPs or simples or even traditional IRAs based on your business structure.
Like where on the forms?
If you're a sole proprietor, it usually goes on Schedule C or maybe Schedule F for farmers. Partnerships use Form 1065, S-Corp use Form 1120S, C-Corp use Form 1120. The deduction for your own contributions typically ends up flowing through to your personal Form 1040, usually on Schedule 1, line 16 is common for self-employed plan deductions.
And they need that net earnings from self-employment figure we talked about.
Yes, that's the basis for calculating their own contributions. And they use those special worksheets or rate tables in Pub 590A to figure the deductible amount.
Okay. And just generally for anyone dealing with IRAs, what are the main tax forms they might see or need to file?
Well, if you take money out of an IRA, you'll get a form 1099-9R from the financial institution. Pay attention to the codes in box 7. They explain the type of distribution.
Like if it's an early withdrawal or normal?
Exactly. If you owe additional taxes, like the 10% early withdrawal penalty, or penalties for excess contributions or failing to take RMDs, you'll likely need to file Form 5329, additional taxes on qualified plans.
Okay, 5329 for penalties.
We mentioned Form 8606 several times. That's crucial for tracking non-deductible contributions to traditional IRAs. And it's also used for reporting certain distributions from Roth IRAs and conversions.
Got it. 1099.R for distributions, 5329 for penalties, 8606 for non-deductible contributions and Roth stuff.
That's a good summary. And of course, the IRS website, irs.gov, and publications 590A contributions and 590B distributions are the go-to resources for all the details.
Woo. Okay, that was a lot, but really helpful. So just to wrap our heads around it, we covered the different IRA flavors, traditional, Roth, SEP, simple. We talked contribution limits for 2024 and 2025, including those new Roth options in SEPs and simples.
Right, and the basics of distributions, rollovers, RMDs, the potential pain of early withdrawal penalties, and those scary prohibited transactions.
Plus, special notes for the self-employed. It feels like getting these rules right is pretty fundamental for planning retirement effectively and not getting surprise tax bills.
Absolutely. It really is foundational. And while hopefully this deep dive gives you a really solid overview, everyone's situation is different. So, you know, digging deeper into the parts that apply to you or talking with a financial advisor or a tax pro is often a really good idea.
Definitely. And it's clear things are changing too, like with Secure 2.0 bringing in new options, especially around Roth and disaster relief. It keeps evolving.
It does. Which leads to maybe a final thought for you, the listener, to ponder. With all these choices now and the rules shifting, how can you best use the flexibility within the different IRA types to really build that long-term financial security you're aiming for?
Yeah. What questions does all this information spark about your own retirement strategy? Something to think about.